Across America, Walmart is helping small and medium-sized businesses grow. The retailer's $350 billion investment in U.S. manufacturing supports businesses like Athletic Brewing, which opened a new brewery and hired 200 people since working with Walmart. Learn how Walmart's commitment to products made, grown, or assembled in America is fueling the country's workforce by visiting walmart.com/America at work.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. This hour, we're going to be joined by Senator Dave McCormick, who's right here in studio, and Ben Domenech. So much happening. Looks like Bill Maher is going to be meeting with Kid Rock. And Kid Rock are going to be meeting with the President of the United States. I think Dana White's going to be there today. Also, the President announced his first foreign trip. It's going to be in May to Saudi Arabia. But what a weekend in terms of what's happening. I mean, if you look at most of the left-wing channels, they're trying to talk about this signal situation. Got it. Done, finished, through. This week is going to be about tariffs, for at least. But there's so many other storylines that are percolating underneath, including the Iranians walking away, looks like, from direct talks with us. And Trump saying flat out, we all know, you have a choice. Either negotiate your nuclear program away, or we're going to blow it up. That's essentially what he's saying. The Houthi rebel attacks have not stopped, and President Trump's doing what he always said. If Vladimir Putin does not negotiate, I guess legitimately, he is not going to be somebody who's going to give in to him. And already the president said he is really pissed off, to quote him exactly, at Vladimir Putin. One of the things he's mad at, he has not stopped the bombing in the Black Sea, not stopped the bombing of energy situations. And on top of that, he said Zelensky's an illegitimate ruler and he wants to see regime change in Ukraine. That's pretty much why they invaded. So with us right now is Senator Dave McCormick. Now, normally, it's always great to have him on, but especially today because you have a brand new book out tomorrow officially, but you can get it now. Who Believed in You? How Purposeful Mentorship Changes the World. Congratulations, Senator.
Hey, Brian. Good to be with you.
So you thought about, you had this book going before.
Yeah,
before
it's been
the pandemic,
for a couple
right?
years. Yeah, well, it started during the pandemic. You know, we were locked up with our six daughters, and they couldn't see their teachers or their coaches. And we started to think about, you know, their relationships were strained. We started to think about, Dina and I, how mentorship had changed our lives and that they had a real gap. And we started to talk to some of our friends about it, you know, successful folks. And across the board, all of them had been benefited by a mentor or two that had helped them become who they are, whether it's Sarah Huckabee Sanders or Satya Nadella or Steve Schwartzman or, you know, Brian Grazer, the Oscar-winning producer. And so we said, you know, let's do this project where we talk to people, and it ultimately became a book. And so the book is about mentorship, and it's about not the people you've ever heard of. It's not about the famous people. It's about the people who help them become who they are. And the key thing here is, who believed in you?
Right.
Have you gone to the people who believed in you, Brian, and said thank you? Because the people we interviewed said, man, we wish we would have done that. And then what are you doing to pay it forward? Because all of us can make a huge difference if we help young people become their best selves and they change the world.
Right. And for you, lots with sports. You're a great athlete. You played football. You wrestled all the way through college. Went to West Point. After serving in the military, became very successful in business. And then said, hey, you know what? I'm going to try this political thing. you and Dr. Oz went down to a death march in the primary. And then you had this huge win over a longtime sitting senator, Senator Casey, in Pennsylvania. So the sitting senator, you've just been doing this for 2 months now.
Right.
So the person who you cite is a football coach.
Yeah, a football coach. You know, I was riding the bench. I was a sophomore in high school, and the coach got fired, and a new coach came in, and he watched all the films. And he came to me the summer before my junior year and said, I think you got real potential here. You're going to have to earn it. So I go into the football training camp. At the end of the camp, he makes me the co-captain as a junior. Wouldn't have ever imagined it. I end up having a great season, another great season. I become an all-state football player. I get recruited to West Point. I ultimately wrestled at West Point, not football, but I got recruited. It changed my life. I'm not kidding you, Brian. I never thought of myself as that guy. I never thought I was the captain of the team. I didn't think I was that good. He saw something in me I didn't see in myself, and it literally changed the course of my life, and there's been a couple people like that.
Right. And so how many people do you interview in their book?
You know, we interviewed we about 25 key people in our book, so people in political life, people in business, people that were actors. I mean, it's our Hollywood producers, David Chang, the famous chef. And the stories are incredible. And you know, may I share one or two just
sure.
to give you an example? A great example is Satya Nadella. So he's the CEO of Microsoft, I think arguably the most successful CEO in the world right now. And he tells a story about he grew up in India and had a cricket coach that really helped him find himself. But he joined Microsoft eventually as a software developer, was sort of promoted to mid-level management. And this guy, Microsoft buys this software company called Great Plains Software. And the guy who started it becomes Satya's boss and runs all the software businesses at Microsoft. And sees this promise in Satya, mentors him, helps him become, gets to know his parents, really becomes his person. And that guy's name was Doug Burgum, who went on to become the governor and now President Trump's Secretary of Energy. And when they were looking for a CEO for Microsoft, Satya was not sort of in the group that was most likely. He was a consideration. They called Doug Burgum and said, "Well, you know, what do you think of Satya?" He said, he's incredible. He's the guy to lead Microsoft into the future. And of course, that's what's happened. So these relationships come and go, and it makes all the difference in the world. The other thing we saw is mentors, you know, they have trusting relationships. They have common values. They have commitment to one another. But the thing they do that is absolutely necessary, they help you have the confidence to overcome failure. They help you have the confidence to take risk. Everybody in this book, they're all these super successful people. They've all failed. We've all failed. I failed. I lost a campaign. I got fired as a CEO. These things happen. And when you face that that failure, when you face that challenge,
right.
Mentors can be there to help you dust yourself off and get back in
and
the game.
And also when you fail too, you get hardened.
You get hardened.
You go, "Hey, survived it. I bounced back. Okay, so what's the worst come to worst? I lose this job, I'll get another."
Exactly.
Well, you know, I'll find a way. But until you do that, until you break the glass, you don't know.
That's right.
And that's a lot of time when it comes to parenting, you want to make sure your kids don't feel that. But probably the best thing they could do early is feel that, right?
Toughens them up. That's no doubt about it. You need resilience.
Did you worry about that with your kids, being that you were so financially successful? You could do a lot of things that you weren't able to do as a kid. Do you worry about your kids not being tough enough and resilient enough?
You know, I think we've had good success with that with our kids because we never.
Did you have to be cognizant of it?
Absolutely. Very aware of it. They had to, you know, the best meritocracy you can find is sports. And when your kids play sports, you know, it doesn't matter how much you want them to succeed, they've got to succeed on their own. So all of our kids, for the most part, played sports, and we try to make sure they earn their way and find mentors. So all my kids in various ways have had mentors. My one daughter now is in particular is sort of has a mentorship with someone who's helping her pursue her career. These things make all the difference. We hope that they're as successful as having great mentors as we've been.
So I want to go back to the book, but let's talk about what's happening today. On Wednesday, they call it Liberation Day, where we're going to have reciprocal tariffs with everyone. I mean, things is really unbalanced, like India, 40% tariff on cars coming into India. How's that going to happen? You know, some of the imbalances with lumber and Canada, but it's all happening at once. Here's what Donald Trump said last night. The audio's not great, but he said on Air Force One, cut one.
The tariffs will be far more generous than those countries were to us, meaning they will be kinder than those countries were to the United States of America over the decades. They ripped us off like no country's ever been ripped off in history. And we're going to be much nicer than they were to us, but it's substantial money for the country, nevertheless.
So how do you see it? I mean, you do have your years of Bridgewater.
Yeah.
This is what you were doing. You're very tapped into the international business.
Yeah. Well, first, I try to start with, you know, anxiety. Uncertainty is the worst thing you want as a business person. You don't want uncertainty. You want as much certainty as possible so you can make your bets. And the reason the markets are so roiled right now is that there's uncertainty. But when I talk to CEOs, I try to say, well, let's start with the certainty. There's uncertainty, but let's start with the certainty. The certainty is the biggest deregulation in 50 years. The certainty is unlocking energy and energy dominance. The certainty is $2 trillion of new investment in the United States. And the certainty is we're going to get the tax cut extensions made permanent or certainly extended. Those are huge sources of uncertainty. And in that backdrop, there's also the uncertainty of what the tariffs will do. The moment the tariffs come out, then people can start to make decisions on what they're actually going to do. I'm supportive of what the president's trying to do in the following sense. I think reciprocal tariffs that get a fair deal for the American worker, a fair deal for American businesses, are absolutely necessary.
Well, where's the greatest imbalance in Dave McCormick's mind?
I think the greatest imbalance is probably around manufacturing businesses, because what happens is they're subsidized in China and other places. They don't actually have the same cost of capital as U.S. companies because they get federal support. The Chinese give them federal support.
And they also don't get paid as much.
And they don't get paid as much. So that's in particular where I think we want to bring home that manufacturing. The steel tariffs, the aluminum tariffs are meant to level the playing field. I think that's the area that we have probably the biggest imbalances. The area where I think we have to be careful to make sure we have a capability on our shores, independent of what the other side's doing, is semiconductors and pharmaceuticals. We learned during COVID that we're dependent on other countries for the large majority of semiconductors.
And nothing's been done about it.
Well, nothing's been done yet, but I think you're going to see a lot more under.
And the way you do that is don't say, hey, I command you to come back. What you do is say, make it make financial sense to come back. So if China gets, if most of our pharmaceuticals are in China, and I think they are, if you say a 25% tariff on everything that comes in, so then that company's got to tell their shareholders that now it's not financially rewarding for us to continue this situation. In theory, they'll bring it back. Now, you tell me the reality. You know these people on these boards. Will they do that?
They will do it. I think they will do it and are starting to do it. I mean, already you've seen a huge movement out of China, but I think you're going to see more and more sourcing.
And China brought that on themselves.
Absolutely. Totally unfair. What President Trump's saying about the post-World War II period, you know, we gave unbelievably favorable terms to Europe and Japan to help them lift their economies after a horrible war that devastated them. But those rules of the road have been in place and stayed in place for 70 years, and they got to change.
So Sean Fain, it's so interesting the way your party is so different now. You have Sean Fain, who's upset that the president got rid of unions for civil rights workers. Anyone working for the federal government was unionized. The president said that's no longer allowed. I'm not sure if that's going to hold up in court. I hope so. But here, Sean Fain is not liking that, but he's loving the fact that we're having these tariffs and telling the car companies, if you make your car outside the country, 25% tariff. Here's what he said is the facts. Cut 19.
We've seen over 90,000 manufacturing facilities leave the United States. We've seen, in the big three alone in the last 20-plus years, 65 plants have closed. Look, tariffs aren't the total solution. Tariffs are a tool in the toolbox to get these companies to do the right thing, and the intent behind it is to bring jobs back here and invest in the American workers. If they're going to bring jobs back here, you know, they need to be life-sustaining jobs where people can make a good wage, a living wage.
And they would, but the problem is, too, with the union workers, that they also made things hard on their own companies because the job demands that they have made other companies go, listen, we're better off leaving the country without a union or going to the South where there is no union.
Yeah, I think what you saw the coalition that President Trump won with in Pennsylvania and I won with was the trade unions were on the rank and file, not at the national level. They were with Harris and Casey, but in the rank and file, they were with President Trump and me, probably 2/3 to 1/3. It was quite remarkable. These are welders and electricians and pipe fitters and steam fitters. And the reason is, the simple reason is, the commitment to jobs. And the commitment to jobs, it comes in lots of forms. It comes in tariffs because it makes a level playing field, but it comes in energy dominance, unlocking energy. It comes in the deregulation agenda. It comes in the support for skilled workers. Not everybody needs to go to college to live the American dream. It's a comprehensive set of things. So I agree with what he just said about tariffs are just one tool in the toolbox.
Right.
There's got to be a commitment to making sure that America, and in my case, Pennsylvania, is a manufacturing powerhouse. Energy is a critical part of that. Skills is a critical part of that. Deregulation is a critical part of that, too.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe that number. 90,000 manufacturing facilities have left since NAFTA.
Well, a lot of these are small mom-and-pop places that create the jobs. 80% of the jobs come from small businesses.
More with Senator McCormick, whose book is out today, and it is out tomorrow. Who Believed in You? You can download it now. How Purposeful Mentorship Changes the World. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States.
It's a very disturbing case.
In never-before-heard interviews and first-hand perspectives.
It's described as pure evil. That's a good description.
The Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door. Listen and follow now with Amazon Music. Must listen to podcasts from Fox News Audio.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
By reducing waste and fraud, we'll essentially make the economy more efficient, and we'll shift people resources from the government to the private sector. And that will result in an increase in the output of goods and services, and so the average standard of living will therefore rise.
So that's a little from Elon Musk. He was in Green Bay, Wisconsin, trying to make sure that this judge decision, this judge vote on Tuesday, goes the right direction in his terms, because he believes that they're going to, if the left gets in there, they're going to have the majority in the judiciary in Wisconsin, and they're going to gerrymander at least three Republican seats out. It'll probably cost them the majority. That's what's at stake on Tuesday. Senator Dave McCormick knows all about that of Pennsylvania. Senator, your thoughts first about what Musk was saying about what he's trying to do in there. He's cutting out waste and fraud, and he's finding system issues and contracts that are dead, and no accountability about invoices coming in and going out because it's not their money. Yeah. He's changing the whole mindset.
Yeah, no, I think what the president and Elon are doing here is a great service to the American people. But you have to start with the situation. $34 trillion of debt, $1 trillion of interest payments, $2 trillion deficit a year. We bring in $4 trillion in taxes and we spend $6 trillion. You and I could never run our households like this. It got much worse under Biden. We have no choice. We have to rein in the government, rein in the spending. The bureaucracy is out of control. What DOGE is doing is it's creating transparency and focus, transparency on the waste and focus on where to reduce the cost. The Government Accountability Office, which is a bipartisan thing, estimates $500 billion of waste, fraud, and abuse.
What could they do to change the perception of what they're doing? Brett Baer's show, which is on Fox Nation right now, going a long way in doing that. These CEOs like you, very successful in business, trying to help out the government for 6 months.
Yeah,
what could they do to change it?
Well, I think what you just said, it's the more transparency, the more they get out and describe what they're finding and what they're doing, the more you see that these are people that are trying to serve. They're working around the clock to serve the public good,
basically.
Right, to serve the public good. Elon Musk is doing this to serve the public good. And I also want to be clear, and they said this, but just two things. One, the person who ultimately is responsible for this is the president and his cabinet. This isn't Elon Musk making a bunch of things. No, he identifies the opportunity, and then the different cabinet secretaries at Interior and Transportation make the decisions. There's clear accountability. Number two, when you make big, bold decisions, there's going to be mistakes. They're acknowledging that. You just have to fix them quickly. And that's the kind of vision that that this effort's bringing to them.
I love this book. It's called Who Believed in You? Why do you want people to read it?
I think right now it's overwhelming sometimes. There's so much going on. You feel helpless in terms of making a difference. What this book is telling you is you don't have to be a famous person. You don't have to be a famous media person or a senator to make a difference in the world. You can mentor someone and help them become their best
selves. And we're stuck on the computers these days. You opened the book talking about the need to get off the devices, stare people in the eyes, and help them out.
Absolutely. And the question I want everybody who is listening to ask themselves, who believed in you, number one? Did you say thank you to them, number two? Because a lot of people in the book said, oh, I wish I would have told them. And number three, what are you doing to pay it forward by mentoring someone else?
Find somebody else you can help out with, especially in the single parent era. You got to step in and fill that void. Senator Dave McCormick, congratulations on all your success.
Thank you.
It wasn't without some trip ups along the way,
for
most of your success.
WhoBelievedInYou.com. Thank you.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Trump said prices will go down because it will incentivize companies to build in the U.S. Do you agree?
The economics does not suggest that at all, and I'm not alone. It's the economic consensus that actually, in fact, car prices will go up. And what we tend to see is some of it will be absorbed in margins and some of it will show up in layoffs as higher costs go up in terms of production. But it's just very hard to find things that are solely produced in the United States. And even those car makers that are most insulated from tariffs do get some kind of parts from abroad or steel that is going to increase the cost of that vehicle.
Diane Swonk, a KPMG chief economist and managing director on ABC on Sunday morning. We're looking at the markets. They're not loving the uncertainty with the tariffs. Terrible Friday. Right now, the market's down 393 points. Ben Domenech joins us now, Fox News contributor. Hey, Ben, welcome back.
Hey, great to be with you as always, Brian. And look, you know, we are experiencing, I think, right now, something that we need to understand as being in the context of Donald Trump's overall approach to the economy, that he believes that there's a need for a sustained, move to get people back working in jobs that they don't know, that they do not have, and that they have not had in the American heartland for a very long time. And he believes that it's worth the pain that this market is currently experiencing in order to do that. That's a political bet. And it's one that is, based on the policies that he wants to pursue. But it's also one that I think has a lot of Republicans nervous.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying it's going to be painful. It's going to be a little unwieldy. But if we want to bring manufacturing back, we can't command it. We have to make it financially sensible to do it. And pharmaceuticals, for example, 25% tariffs on China, 20%, he said, just on the fentanyl alone. And then if you talk about Europe, the same thing. He's going to look to balance things out. So when the shareholders sit down and the CEOs go, it makes no sense to do these, to have Thailand be the place where we make shirts, to where China, who makes our pharmaceuticals, and now we should bring it back. So it is going to be a titanic shift of economics, and we're not sure exactly how it'll go. What do your people say will happen?
Well, you know, I think I've been talking to a lot of people on Capitol Hill and in Washington over the past couple of weeks about this, and the overall viewpoint from a lot of Republican perspectives is that the president is rolling the dice on this in a way that is going to be, at least in the short term, painful for a lot of different industries. At the same time, when I talk to people, especially in the auto industry, and you've seen the reactions there, as well, a lot of what they say is, the president has his perspective, and it is going to be painful, but this is also something that is probably needed, in the sense that we need to have this kind of stuff that transitions a lot of American industry back into the heartland and doesn't allow for these types of things to simply be something where we have to be dependent on other nations around the world for all of our supply. And I think that that's a significant development and one that we're going to have to see play out. He's obviously making this bet because he believes in it.
Here's what Kevin Hassett said with Maria yesterday. He's one of his economic advisors, one of his real stalwarts. Cut five.
Notice how many announcements there have been made about all the investment that's coming to the U.S. Even Hyundai said they're going to build a $10 billion plant this week. And so the point is, as all that stuff comes to the U.S., then the value of U.S. production has to go up. And so right now, about 15% of GDP is imported. And that's the part of GDP that will be impacted by our trade policies. And they're basically taking 15% of GDP and onshoring it. Meanwhile, one of the biggest news items that people haven't been talking about is the Big Six, the group of us that are negotiating with Congress, the tax bill, have had an enormous amount of positive progress.
So that is, we're getting a lot of money back here. We're hearing a lot about companies coming back here and a lot of pledges to do things. And that is a positive, but it's not steadying the market.
It's not steadying the market, and it's not going to happen overnight. And that's the kind of thing that I think is really, a risk that we have to understand is in place here. The last time around, when Donald Trump was president, the market, really took off and you saw the economy booming in the way that it did. But it also didn't have the kind of functional effects that he really wants to see happen when it comes to bringing back this type of American industry And he believes it's really important. And I think that, you know, this is something he's been consistent about throughout his entire career in terms of wanting that type of thing to come back here. And we're going to have to see it play out, and Republicans are going to have to, grit their teeth and bear it.
So I those interviews that Brett did with Doge, the Doge, seven guys from Doge and Musk, were absolutely amazing and enlightening and encouraging.
I have to say, I think it's one of the most significant political interviews that we've seen in the last decade. It's one of these things that's going to be, people will go back and look at it in terms of poli-sci classes and the like, in terms of understanding what was really going on in our American government. And the things that we learned from it are just, astounding in some ways.
So Social Security, all the records, 200 million pieces of paper, 22 million files over the past 70 years. That's how we're keeping Social Security records. And now they're going to be digitized in 2 months. 15 million people and over 120 million in this system. This was found in 2008. Staff workers said that there's billions of dollars in fraud. Nothing happened. When they walked into Social Security, not to cut Social Security, they're finding out that everybody was begging for reform. For example, why are there so many 120 years old in the system? Why are there so many 180-year-old people in the system? Because there's no system to knock them out. There's a computer system that was 60 years ago that they keep modernizing at 100 million a year. They think if Social Security could communicate with all other elements of the government, it would stop the small business loans from being given to 9 months old fraudulently. Why? Because the 9 month old would not jive for taking out a loan because Social Security would be talking to the Small Business Association.
I don't know. I mean, my 2 year old, I think she's a pretty smart girl.
Right.
I mean, you know, she might be able to figure this out, Brian.
Maybe.
it's absolutely astounding. And the things that they've come away with. Look, Brian, one of the things that we deal with regularly, you know, from a fiscally conservative perspective, is that when you make the argument about this, that, or the other issue, and what you'll hear back is, well, that's only X percent of government spending. You know, it's only 0.02, you know, that kind of thing. But guess what? That stuff adds up. It adds up. And at the end of the day, you know, if you add up all these different things, you come away with a giant pile of money that is going out from the American taxpayer that ought to be spent wisely, that ought to be spent carefully, and instead is flowing out enormously toward fraud or in a kind of directionless manner where there's no one who's even on the other end of it. I mean, the idea that we have so many different people who are benefiting, you know, from a system that is essentially being sustained, an old system, an old, computer system that needs to be updated, that needs to be connected to other things. And yet there are people who profit from the fact that we stay doing these old systems over and over and over again, as opposed to updating
right.
it. And that's something that they're targeting and targeting directly.
So that's the one thing that people should understand. I want Congress to know. But if Congress gets involved, they're going to go back to their individual districts and their party. These guys aren't. I still, after watching them for an hour and a half, and the whole thing's on Fox Nation right now, I don't know what party they're with. I don't know what Elon Musk's party was. He was hanging out in Silicon Valley. He was a Democrat. Now he's clearly not. Here's an example. Anthony Armstrong, the Doge Office of Personal Management. Here's what he said. Cut 28.
It's a lot of money sloshing out the door. We spend as a country about $3 billion a day an interest expense. It's probably the first thing that got me focused on this and thinking about how do we get to this place? How do we spend more on interest expense than we do on defense, for example? So there's a lot going out the door.
So that motivated him to do this. Cut 29.
My focus, actually, while I've been here, has been on the agency side and on the workforce side, and how is the federal workforce of 2.3 million civilians, how's it constituted? How does it function? There are 259 discrete departments in the federal government. One of the things we did was we did an ontology of the full federal government using AI and brute force to map out 16,000 boxes on the federal government org chart.
And he came up with this, cut 30.
How do we get this to be efficient? For example, at the federal government, one of the things we've learned is you've got 4 payroll processors in the federal government. So it's 2.3 million employees get paid. They get paid through 4 payroll processors. One is in the Department of Interior. One is in the Department of Agriculture. They actually do very good work at this team at the Agriculture Department. But it's at the Agriculture Department, and they serve 76 federal agencies from the Agriculture Department for payroll. Everything from the IRS to the Smithsonian gets paid through the Agriculture Department. So that just doesn't make any sense. There should be one. You can debate where it should go. You should get the efficiencies of pulling those together.
So you have that, and you're just going to have all these computers to states, and they brought up the example of Medicare. So Medicaid. So, oh, okay, I get Medicaid in Connecticut, and I get it in New York. Why? Because Medicaid doesn't talk to New York. So I'm able to scam it. So we're not talking about cutting back benefits or people. We're talking about stopping fraud. A lot of it's foreign.
This is the thing that the Democrats are struggling with at this moment. If you believe in government spending, which Democrats generally do and Republicans generally don't, if you believe in massive, you know, entitlements and the like, then you also need to believe in efficiency in that practice, meaning you have to have that Bill Clinton, Al Gore attitude toward cutting government, toward making sure that, you know, we have the kind of fiscal responsibility within these programs. Because if we're going to be in favor of these massive programs, you have to make sure that they actually work for people and that they're not just sending money out into the ether. And that's the problem that Democrats have right now, because they have put themselves in a position where they believe that every dollar that goes out the door is one that they want to defend. And it's the stupidest position on the planet, Brian. I mean, because it's so – if you are in favor of big government programs like this, you also have to be in favor of making sure that they go to the right people, because otherwise people will lose trust in them. They will doubt their efficiency. They will turn against them, and they will believe, hey, we would rather burn it to the ground than continue to have these types of programs. And that's where you get the Tea Party movement. That's where you get all the kind of fiscal conservatism of which I am a part and others are as well, who believe that this government has been so inefficient and has been so poorly stewards of the American taxpayer dollar that it needs to have a major, major course correction.
So the thing is, and I think about it logically, it does make more sense. If I come in there and it's 1991, I'm in there and I'm probably going to do 2 years, 2.5. Okay, it's the system here. I'm not going to blow up the system. I don't have the power to blow up the system.
Yep.
The secretary usually doesn't stay 4 years, 2.5 years, 2 years. Some stay 4 years. And then they go in there and go, wow, I'm going to try to make this system, but I'm not going to blow it up. So you have a president that did it for 4 years, looked at the institutions, waited out 4 years, and then came back, and he knows exactly where he's going. And he goes to Elon Musk. I heard the interview when Musk proposed himself to do efficiency. Now he gets this guy, Brad Smith, to come out, and he's going to focus on health and human services. So I want you to hear this, because everyone thinks, and they keep on going with this Democratic talking point, that Musk is cutting Medicare and Medicaid. Cut 33.
Biggest pot is either in Social Security or, I guess, Medicare and Medicaid, right?
Yeah, but I can speak to Medicare and Medicaid a little bit. We're 100% committed to protecting Medicare and Medicaid. But at the same time, the Government Accountability Office, GAO, has said there's $84 billion a year in improper payments. And so how does that happen? I'll just give you a couple of examples. So one, we're finding there's actually an article in the Wall Street Journal about this, that there's individuals who are getting paid, or the health plans are getting paid, in two separate states for the same individual. So New York pays for somebody's Medicaid and Connecticut pays for somebody's Medicaid. And you say, how could that possibly happen? And the reason is they have individual data systems. They run their programs separately. The federal government kind of sort of collects the data, but does not put it together to identify those opportunities. So that's a really concrete example of we're paying twice when we don't need to be paying twice. Paying once won't affect anybody's health care, but it'll save us half the money.
So that's what it is. He should circle the word efficiency. This is all about efficiency.
The whole point here, too, Brian, is that this is something that is going to be determinative for our kids' future, for our grandkids' future. The strength and fiscal confidence of the American government is something that is of enormous importance, and we should believe that whether we're Republican or Democrat, okay? And that's the kind of thing that I think we see going on right now within this innovative program that is giving me, you know, frankly, heartening vibes. I will tell you this, Brian. There are a lot of people in Washington who are very upset about this, and I'm not just talking about people, you know, who aren't friendly ideologically to you and me. I have had so many people who have been, you know, freaked out about this whole process, And I keep saying to them, this is something that has been a long time coming, and the fact that Congress didn't do it originally is the reason that we end up in this situation. And I'm happy because I believe that this is going to be something that makes sure that America can be the kind of a world power that it needs to be in the future for my daughters and for their daughters, et cetera, et cetera. And it's something that needs to happen and needs to happen now.
And by the way, Ben writes about in his column, the signal leak isn't just about Europe. It shows how powerful J.D. Vance is. And it's an interesting perspective. Ben, you can follow him at B. Dominich. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. And, of course, editor-at-large of the Spectator World. Great job. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. And I'll tell you, I was just so impressed with what I heard from those Doge guys. Brett did a great job. But their message was really the key. They're just talking about making things more efficient. It was like someone comes in to help you with your home after a flood. You don't really think, what political party are they with? How do they plan on replacing the sheetrock? How do they plan on bringing it back better? And that's what these guys are doing. That's what really impressed me. And that's the thing, is how they're mislabeled as people just cutting jobs or don't care. And you know, maybe the chainsaw at CPAC wasn't the best idea, especially because they've only cut 0.05% of the workforce. Many people wanted out of it anyway. And the other story that's not getting much traction is, as these federal workers are dispatched or leave on their own, they're being solicited and recruited by different states who need these workers with this expertise. So this is what was brought up by the guy who's in charge of Ways and Means now, Congressman Jody Arrington, cut 37.
I think if we don't make these changes, this program and the federal budget in general is not sustainable, because we're allowing states and local organizations to siphon hundreds of billions of dollars away from the Medicaid beneficiary and the Medicaid program. We also, this is the one means-tested program that doesn't have work requirements for able-bodied adults.
So would people keep saying, and I keep watching the Democrats watch all the Sunday shows this week, and we'll always flip around, they keep saying Donald Trump is going to cut, he's giving a tax break to his billionaire friends and cutting Medicaid and Social Security. He doesn't even bring that up. It's not even in the math. But then when it comes to Medicaid, which what they did with Obamacare is they gave these states these grants and they said expand Medicaid. And they did. But now they expect to get that money all the time. And now these people are used to getting it. Medicaid's for people who are either laid up with disability or for people who financially can't afford it. It's not for able-bodied people that can be work that are out of work. So they expanded the requirement, but it's unsustainable. We don't have the money for it, so it's added to the debt. So when you say cutting Medicaid, it's not cutting Medicaid. It's cutting the free grants they're giving to people who don't deserve it.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. We're back in action now from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, or around the country, around the world, where the Yankees are hitting home runs out of this world. I've never seen a start like this. Even though they're banged up, they changed their bats. I'm serious. They changed their bats where the meat of the bat is, and it's causing a big stir. A lot of people happy in New York for the first time in sports, and the Knicks trying to hold on the best they can. But it's a national show, so let's talk about the national. It is the national pastime, Earl. It used to be. We know this. Locally, there's a few things going on. Trump's going to announce they're going to visit Saudi Arabia as his first foreign trip. And tonight, Bill Maher, Kid Rock, and Dana White will have dinner at the White House. Will they all get along? I think it's so cool that Kid Rock's doing this. He's going to join us tomorrow on Fox and Friends, and we'll bring some of that sound back to you. It could be cool because Bill Maher does speak his mind, and I'd be very curious to see what comes out of this meeting. Brad Raffensperger will be with us, the Georgia Secretary of State. Michael Goodwin standing by from the New York Post. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
If we have the combination of a trillion-dollar increase in an economic output and a trillion-dollar decrease in the budget deficit, then the outcome should be that there is no inflation or very little inflation.
Let's see. Doge fantasy versus reality. What they are doing is saving the economy. Well, we are being told in most corners that they're burning it down. We bring you their mission and their achievements in their own words.
Number two.
What has happened here is that Putin, he doesn't feel, is negotiating on actual terms. He keeps delaying. And what President Trump has said right now is if he continues to play games, he's going to get tough on Russia just like he did in 2017.
Told you, Vladimir Putin has become irrational, and Trump blasted him in his quest to bring a ceasefire to the fighting in Ukraine. If Putin doesn't sober up, Trump is prepared to slap sanctions that will sting and more.
Number one.
There's new anxiety over tariffs. That's the problem here. Peter Navarro tells Fox that tariffs will be announced Wednesday could bring in $6 trillion in 10 years. Now, that is a form of tax. How much of it will be paid by consumers, we don't know, but it's a question that's really upsetting Wall Street.
It is. Liberation Day is Wednesday, but tariff affects the market right now. President Trump's effort to bring manufacturing back to America and rebalance trade is causing shocks to the rock in the market. We're going to look at the short and long-term effects. Michael Goodwin joins us now. Michael, right now, it looks like we're down a few hundred points. We got killed on about 700 points on this tariff. Trump is convinced long-term it's going to be a boon to America and recalibrate the economy. Have you been sold yet?
Well, good morning, Brian. No, I tend to believe that the people on Wall Street are much smarter than I am about these things. And when I looked on Friday, I think the S&P was down something like 5% for the year. The NASDAQ tech heavy down more than double that, over 10%. So that's a lot of money for people who, you know, in their 401ks or their Roth IRAs, everyone's getting hammered because most people simply invest in the indexes and the indexes are down significantly. So I think the president is banking on the idea that people trust his, that this is why he was elected.
Yep.
That people trust his economic instincts. But, you know, that only goes so far. I mean, at some point, the proof is in the pudding, as they say, and he's going to have to, I think, produce results, and that includes on Wall Street.
Here's Kevin Hassett, his economics advisor, cut two.
Well, President Trump is going to decide how many countries. The point about 15 countries is that we have massive, massive trade deficits with about 15 countries. It doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of other unfair trade practices around the world. And so the reciprocal part of our trade actions will be visible to everybody on the second. The thing I can say is if you look at what we've already accomplished, I don't think there's ever been a trade team that's more united in accomplishing the president's goals. If you think about it, there have been action after action after action. And you mentioned the auto tariffs. Since they're in the past, it's easier for me to talk about. The auto tariffs come from a backstory that I think is really interesting, Maria, that has really haunted all of us who study the U.S. economy.
So right now on the economy, according to CBS, he's getting 44% approval on inflation, 56% disapproval. On the economy, 48-52. He's usually much inverse on that. When asked about tariffs, not enough, people say. Only 7% thinks he's not doing enough on tariffs. Right amount, only 31% says he's doing the right amount. Too much, 55%. So far, it's been all rocking the economy in anticipation of what it'll do. But you know his overall objective, Michael, is to bring manufacturing back and to give America control of their own economy again. And do you think it's possible? That's a question that only time will tell, I think.
Well, look, I mean, he has had some successes with investment in America from companies that could have invested elsewhere. And I think he would argue, as would Kevin Hassett, that the reason they are investing here rather than Asia or Europe is to avoid the tariffs. That, look, everybody wants access to American consumers because American consumers are not only numerous, they are the wealthiest in the world by and large. And so to get access to the American market, these companies would rather be based here, have their manufacturing here, as many of the automakers discovered years and years ago. It was better to build Mercedes in Alabama than it was to build them in Germany and ship them to Alabama. And I think the president is banking on that. And there's some reason why that is an important part of this. But the other part of it that is that inflation or a tariff can cause inflation because the product simply costs more now, and somebody's got to pay that. And that, and if there's enough of that in the society, then you've got the inflation problem again. So I don't think the president has as much time as he thinks he does on this. The public trust, by and large, trusted him more than the Democrats on the economy. But that trust can easily evaporate if something goes wrong here. So if I were him, I wouldn't be so patient.
I understand. You know what I think is going to happen? Massive rebalancing with somewhat friendly countries like Canada, India, Mexico, Brazil, who can be friendly when they want to be. So I think there's going to be people, okay, let me address that. And I think you're going to see a reconfiguring. But what the president's doing is what Joe Biden said he was going to do. He was going to bring pharmaceuticals back to America. That wasn't going to happen. Remember, after PPE, we didn't make any. We're using plastic bags. So that's one of his goals, too. So we'll see what happens. I know a lot of the unions appreciate it, but I want to talk about what you wrote about over the weekend. Katrina Armstrong resigns as Columbia's interim president after she cuts the deal on last Friday, saying she'll agree to all nine of the Trump administration's demands to change Columbia. And on Saturday, she gets on a conference call and basically says, "Dad, don't worry about what I said." Now, Claire Shipman, the ex-anchor, takes over. But this weekend, Columbia actually had Alumni Day, and they took that time, many of them, to burn their diplomas because of the arrest of Mahmoud Khalil, who's got solid ties to Hamas. What are they thinking?
Well, Brian, I think we could ask that question of so many colleges around the country. You know, Tufts had a woman who was arrested. You've seen them popping up everywhere. Harvard just ended two departments or removed the people in charge of two departments about Middle East faculty. So this is happening everywhere. And I think what's so surprising about it is that Joe Biden did nothing about it, right? So you had all of these demonstrations last year, all of these anti-Israel, pro-Hamas, you know, pro-Palestinian, give me a break, it's pro-Hamas. I mean, this is the media. The New York Times had a story yesterday in which it said that some people believe that the chant to the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, that chant talks about the elimination of Israel. It's not some people. That's the entire purpose of the chant, is to eliminate Israel, to picture a Mideast without an Israeli state. And so this notion that somehow these people are just engaging in First Amendment rights, that they're just leading to discussions, baloney. They were doing these takeovers of these schools. They were disrupting. They were threatening. And so if you're an Israeli, imagine you're walking by, or even just an American Jewish student, you're walking by a protest and they're saying, "From the river to the sea, Palestine will be free." That means the end of Israel. And if it isn't the job of the university administrators to protect those students from the harassment and the intimidation and the hate speech that is, then what is the job of a university administrator? And they have all failed. Columbia has failed. Harvard has failed. Penn has failed. Tufts. You go up and down the line. Virtually every elite college has failed in this regard. And I think the president is hitting back with the only power he has. They're going to investigate the schools, but
I love it.
They clean up their act.
Absolutely. But I don't know if you saw my show on Sunday night. And the thing is, it's not speculation anymore. We know that in the tunnels, in by being held hostage, a specific hostage came out and said, "They told me exactly. They have direct links to this Palestine will be free, these organizations in America, and we're bragging about winning the PR war." Mark Goldfeder is representing 8 Hamas hostage families. Cut 59.
Students for Justice in Palestine and Within Our Lifetime, which are two of the groups that we just sued in the Southern District of New York. Here, by the way, is a thank you letter they got afterwards from the PFLP, another Hamas-affiliated terrorist organization, thanking them for their service to Hamas. And the beautiful part is, when you hire these useful idiots to be your PR agents on American campuses. What you get are useful idiots who make useful idiot mistakes. So, for example, here is an actual recruitment flyer for Hamas that they handed out on campus, and it reads, "This is an intentional and coordinated effort to uphold the principles of Hamas, the PFLP, and the Al-Aqsa Martyr Brigade."
Where did that appear?
September 24th, 2024, on Columbia's campus, handed it out by the CUAD, the group that Mahmoud Khalil represents.
Please, come on. This is what Marco Rubio has just got to present. Done, finished, through. Anybody with this guy's got to go. That's Khalil. These groups, since when are we allowing Hamas to have a say in what happens on our college campuses? Is this crazy?
And you know, Brian, that gets to the heart of America's interest here. We have labeled these groups terrorist organizations. With that come certain penalties, and those penalties can be applied to the individuals espousing that ideology, representing those, and spreading the tenets of those organizations. That's what Donald Trump is forcing the colleges to do, and they deserve to be penalized if they won't do it.
You think it's Michael? He's doing everything at once. It's overwhelming, like, to prepare for a show, because he's handling the primary schools with decentralizing. Okay, got it. And then on the most high class expensive schools in the country, we are going to have zero tolerance to the anti-Semitic behavior at once. And it's going to cost you $400 million to straighten out. Hey, University of Pennsylvania, you're allowing trans men to compete in sports. We're taking back $175 million. I mean, usually this is one of these stories a year, and then you start scooping up 300 anti-American, ungrateful college students, getting and put them on the launch pad to be deported. That's massive action. That's a message.
Absolutely. And look, I agree with you, Brian. It's hard to keep up, even right, even for journalists. It's very hard to keep pace with this president and all of these orders. And I think he's paying something of a price for that. I think there is a sense of overwhelmingness in terms of the system can't process all of these ideas. Nonetheless, they are all essential. This is big time stuff. The whole thing with Doge, you know, I wrote about this too, that you cannot make this argument about what Doge is doing if you forget that of our $7 trillion budget, approximately $2 trillion of it is borrowed. And so there, when you want to give money away, whether it's to, you know, transgender folk shows in Ecuador or whatever it is, you've got to balance it against the fact that 30% or more of that money is borrowed.
Yes.
And so that's what's infuriating, that so much of the government has just taken it for granted. The money will always be there. We'll just borrow more when we run out. We've run out of room to live that way. And that's why I think it's so important what the president is doing. But unfortunately, the argument is being consumed by just these headlines about this and that and every other thing. It's quite a remarkable achievement what he's doing, but he's not going to get enough credit for it because one thing overshadows another.
Maybe. If people go to Fox Nation, we are the number one network. It's a streaming service that we have that everyone knows about. It has Brett Baer's it's an hour long. He meets with seven members of Doge, and Musk is in the middle, and they all talk separately about what they're doing to straighten out the government. They're not saying people are bad. In fact, they say nice things about the career service members who are welcoming Doge. Help me get a voice here. Help me fix this job. We matter suddenly. You know, it's not an abyss.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Why I think that people will come away from that is it's just the chaos in the federal government, the fact that computer systems don't talk to each other. So one agency has 27 chief information officers.
Yeah.
Just to make sense of all
HHS.
The computer systems. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. It's just crazy.
Well, Michael, can you continue writing? Stay on top of the Columbia thing, because as you write, we know we're going to get a new president of Columbia very shortly, because she's not – Claire Shipman, who hates Trump, who's way to the left, is not going to last either. Michael, thank you.
Right. Brian. Thank you.
1-866-408-7669. I know you have a lot to say. Join me in a moment. And then at the bottom of the hour, Brad Raffensperger has done something I don't think any other Secretary of State has done in any state. You're going to love it. Don't move.
Taking America back.
Canada's been very abusive of the United States for many years.
One ally at a time.
It is an act of economic warfare.
The trade imbalance and our trade deficit has gone up 200+%.
Hey, Canada! Hey, Canada!
With Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, let's go out to Danny's in Israel. Hey, Danny.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Good, good. How's it going in Israel right now?
It's okay. We are coping. And first of all, it's an honor to be again in your show. I have two comments about your last item with Michael. About, you know, the pro-Hamas activists in campuses.
Yes.
So my first comment is, I think we have to praise President Trump and his administration for what they are doing.
Yep.
Fighting anti-Semitism, especially in campuses. They are doing an excellent job. The fact that, you know, leftist judges are blocking the deportation, it's another fact that we have to, you know, we have to go through the legal process. But they are doing an excellent job. Okay, second point, and that's my main point, it's about those guys in campuses like Khalil Ahmed and his colleagues. Brian, it's not only about eliminating anti-Semitism or fighting anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I hear you. It's more than that. I get it. It's anti-Americanism, too. Danny, thank you.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Special elections are always different. Democrats obviously are highly motivated because they took a shellacking last November. They don't like Doge. They don't like that Donald Trump is making America great again. And so they're going to the polls. As long as Republicans turn out in Congressional District 6 in Florida, which, by the way, the voting reports from the last couple days show that Republican votes are surging in that congressional district. But as long as Republican voters get to the polls and vote, they're going to be just fine.
It's a special election week. I mean, you have two over in Florida. It should be Gates and Waltz's seat. Should be layups. They're not without Trump there. And I don't think Randy Fine doesn't seem to be resonating with St. Augustine yet in that area. I know it well. Randy seems to be an affable guy. He's not Mike Waltz. And the Matt Gaetz seat is up. And the president's getting panicky. He's worried about losing a very slim margin with Tom Massey not voting for anything. And then you have Wisconsin's Supreme Court. They could be gerrymandering Wisconsin in a way that could just cut out three Republican seats. And we know, and there's only about a 3 or 4 seat margin with the midterms a year away, that would be detrimental to any progress that Trump would like to make. Brad Raffensperger joins us now, Georgia Secretary of State. Georgia, of course, will be a place where they're going to have an open Senate seat. But it always seems to have an open Senate seat, and Georgia's going to be heavily contested. Brad, welcome back.
Glad to be back. Thank you, Brian.
Hey, first off, glad to stay. I know you're Republican. Are you surprised it's that close in a place like Florida?
Well, I'm really focusing on Georgia. I'm just actually right now we're doing cartwheels because today Attorney General Bondi actually dismissed the case that was put in by Biden administration against SB 202, our Election Integrity Act. So she realized there's no merits in it. I wrote her a letter a month ago. That's what we're doing cartwheels over today. We're focused in on what we do, making sure that only American citizens are voting in our elections. And I think that's really how people should just run on that, because with all the open borders we had under the Biden administration, people are still concerned about non-citizen voting. And my only advice is people should run on that, making sure only American citizens vote in our elections.
So when you did this, they said you're racist. It's Jim Crow 2.0, right? And didn't Joe Biden call you that?
We said it was an affront when that lawsuit was filed 3 years ago. And we now have been vindicated by the Department of Justice. They took a hard look at this. But What about the money that we lost not having the All-Star game? We lost that game in 2021. That's a $100 million loss. But what about also the millions of taxpayer dollars that had to go to pay for the legal cost? How do hard-working Georgians get their money back? They don't. But we move on. But everyone knows that we have record turnout. It's easy to vote. It's hard to cheat. And we get our results posted really quick. And we're really proud of what we've been accomplishing for the voters. The voters are really like and trust the results they get here in Georgia.
So Stacey Abrams has been in the news lately. As you know, she tried to be governor. She failed. She denied that she lost and held on to that statement for a while. Now denies that she denies she lost. But then the EPA started looking at different contracts that she was getting, and they realized Stacey Abrams' Environmental Coalition Group, now they claim they're only alleged link to Stacey Abrams when they credited her for being the reason they got it, got $2 billion. It's called Power Forward Communities. It filed a federal lawsuit against the EPA because the EPA has taken the money back. It says, this is no group, there's no history. You shouldn't have got the $2 billion. Were you aware of any of this?
No, we weren't aware of it, and now everyone else in America is also. We knew she was running a hustle back in 2018. She got close, but then back in the reelection of Brian Kemp, Governor Kemp, he crushed her. He won by 350,000 votes, and so people had figured her out here in Georgia. I guess now America has as well.
So you guys also said you purged nearly a 500,000 inactive voters this summer.
Yes, and actually, I was talking to the speaker's office on Friday afternoon. We said that we really need to make sure that we can get real ID compliant photo ID in all 50 states. It's really important to do that, and we want to be able to update the voter rolls the way Georgia does. We're part of a multi-state organization. We have bilateral agreements with Virginia, Alabama, Texas, and South Carolina. So we're exchanging information, and we partner with our Department of Driver Services, which is Real ID compliant. So they're doing a robust citizenship verification. So when we get this information, we have good information. And when people move around the state of Georgia, then we find out, because typically people in Georgia are updating their driver's license. And our DDS is part of a 40-state compact. And if you get a driver's license in Iowa or Nebraska, then they tell Georgia, who then tells us, and we can keep our list clean. The biggest problem is NVRA does not let us update the voter list 90 days before an election. But meanwhile, people are moving around the state. They just don't sit and say, I can't take that new job. I can't move to this other location. And so you have all this dynamic mobility. We'll be pulling out about 455,000 people, death records, movement, don't live here anymore, things like that. We have the cleanest list in the entire country, and we're proud of that.
Wow, and that's great because it's always going to be a contentious run in Georgia, and then you got a big Senate race coming up next year, correct?
Correct.
We're going to make sure
that only Americans vote, and we have a clean list.
Senator Ossoff is going to be running to get 6 more years, and the word is that Brian Kemp is getting close to making a decision. What do you hope he does?
I told the governor that whatever he does, I will support him 100%, and I'll even support him, our family, with financially. He's just done a great job as governor. People love him here in Georgia. But that's his decision. That's a family decision. But he has my full support, whatever that is.
So that's interesting. So if he asked you your advice, you'd say run?
I don't tell the governor what to do. He tells me maybe what to do, but he doesn't. He's just been we've had a great relationship, and I would never, step on the governor and tell him what he should do. I just know that people love him here in Georgia, and I think actually he has national appeal too. People just really respect him. They like what he does. He's just a solid guy.
So yesterday, Elon Musk was in Wisconsin, and he talked about immigration and the number of Social Security's given out to illegal immigrants. There's been over 2 million immigrants who have don't have immigration status, so not become residents, that have got Social Security cards to the tune of 2 million. People said, well, they just let the border down. They didn't secure it like they used to. They tried to be anti-Trump. He believes it was intentional. What kind of challenge is it when someone goes to register to vote and they have a Social Security number? Because word is that they are trying to register to vote, and they did vote in the last election.
Well, in Georgia, we actually require documentary proof. So you may have a Social Security card that you got from some other state, but regardless, we're going to then find out when they ask, where were you born? And if you weren't born in America, then we say, well, have you naturalized? Can you show your proof of that you have citizenship now? And if you don't have that, then you will not be put on the voter list in Georgia. That's really what Congress needs to work on as they're updating, you know, the NVRA and also the Help America Vote Act, as they're going through that election reform with the SAVE Act, you know, making sure we get it right, that we have a clean list at the top. It's at the top of the funnel, making sure that only Americans are on your voter list. Then you know that only American citizens can possibly be voting. I'm the first Secretary of State to do a citizenship check of our voter rolls about 3 years ago, did another one last year, and going forward, we're going to do this every single year because it builds trust. And trust is the real gold standard with voters.
True. Why do you think other states are reluctant to bring voter ID to voter ID compliant to vote? What would be the reluctance? How do you explain that?
I can't. Because if you look at the open borders, you look at voters' number one concern is out-of-control immigration, and then following that is non-citizen voting. Then it just is common sense, and we've shown we have record turnout, record registrations from, you know, 18, 20, 22, and 24. Every year it's increased. And yet we have these robust checks that we have to make sure you are an American citizen. It makes no sense. But here in Georgia, you know, we work with common sense conservatives to make sure we have robust citizenship checks, make sure we have photo ID, and we're having record turnout. People trust what we do here. 97.1% of all Republicans trusted the results we had in the 2024 elections. And we posted up all of our early voting 1 hour after the polls closed. So we had just record results, record turnout, and quick results.
So, Brad, from what you can tell, and you look at the last the results of the last election, what was different? I mean, for a while, people were saying, well, Georgia's going blue, and maybe it's definitely purple. But it seems pretty red the last election. What changed?
It's just really weak. I'm trying to be as kind to the man as I possibly can. But, he just had open borders, economic policy, spending. Look at how all the out of control spending, and meanwhile, hardworking Georgians, hardworking Americans were getting hit every day. They were struggling trying to keep up with Bidenflation, and so all those things came together. People know they need to make a change, and they made a change, and they're doing it in a big way. And actually, what Elon Musk is trying to do with Doge is right size government. We want to make sure that government is the right size and it's effective. We have shown that you can have fast elections. You can get the results quickly. Why can't we do that in all government agencies that really provide responsive service? Just like when you go to Chick-fil-A or just like when you go to the Apple store. Get great customer service. Well, that's what we do every day in our office, and every government agency should be striving to do that, to really delight your customer, which are the taxpayers of Georgia.
All right, Brad. Thanks so much. Brad Raffensperger, big news. Number one, the Biden-era lawsuit targeting Georgia's SB 202, that when their election reform, that Joe Biden horribly called it Jim Crow 2.0, has been dropped by the Department of Justice. There's no there. And they've also purged 500,000 inactive voters from their rolls. Brad, thanks so much.
Good talking to you, Brad.
Go get him.
God bless.
Well, 1-866-408-7669. Sandra, you're in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
I love your TV show, and I love your radio show, just to let you know.
Thank you.
So, you know, Brian, you're welcome. I was thinking how we are witnessing a subtle form of weaponization with the judges towards the Trump administration. What I mean is, they will, for instance, the latest judge that you should keep an eye on, his name is Matthew Kennedy. He's the district federal judge in Northern Illinois. He wants to destroy hiring by merit and going to the DEI. He already put a ban on it for 2 weeks, and he said he's going to probably keep it on much longer. So to me, when I see all these judges, you know, like James Bozoberg, as Mark Levin calls him, and all these others trying to destroy Donald Trump's efforts, it's a domino effect, I'm afraid, that will go in the wrong direction. Instead of, you know, Dominic effects are good, but when they go in the wrong direction, I'm afraid other judges are going to start to copy this, and it's a problem, don't you think?
Yeah, the whole judge shopping's a huge issue. Same with Republicans. I mean, Republicans would look, and they allowed this about 10 years ago. Republicans would look for, you know, Oklahoma and Nebraska, and would look for red states in order to get their cases heard. We just stop it. Wherever you bring the case, that's where the case is heard. Stop going to Washington, D.C. with all your complaints for when you're a Democrat, because that's where all Republican and all conservative thought and rulings go to die. Thanks so much, Sandra, for your kind words, too. We come back, take more calls, go to your emails, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Also, thanks so much for watching One Nation last night. A lot of you looked at One Nation and found out for the first time I'm going to be going to Dayton June 21st with History, Liberty, and Laughs on stage. Meet you in person. Hope to see you all there, BrianKilmeade.com.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This idea that we can't even have a conversation with the other side?
You have to. They won.
Thank you. That's it. Bottom line, we're in the same damn echo chamber. These guys are crushing us. The Democratic brand is toxic right now. And Democrats, we tend to be a little more judgmental than we should be. This notion of cancel culture, you've been living it. You've been on the receiving end of it for years and years and years. That's real. And Democrats need to own up to that. They've got to mature.
So a couple of things. Gavin Newsom made a great statement. It might be interesting if he was not governor. And he says, I regret the way I governed. But he is governor. And he says he's saying all the right things. But did he come back and stop fighting parents that don't want their men playing in women's sports or boys playing in girls' sports, trans boys, whatever you want to talk about? Did he start saying, you know, my energy policies were so severe, it's really costing my state. My zero tolerance when it comes to drilling and new energy. My demands that everyone buy electric cars. The deadline to switch to gas and electric and no longer allowing combustion engines to be sold. Maybe that's a little bit too severe. The taxes that are going through the roof. Throwing money at home, the homeless situation. Giving clean needles has not worked. We are $6 billion in debt in the state where we were wrong to put $100 million to Trump-proof our state. Was I wrong? I was so wrong in letting our border down. And if you want to apply for asylum, you get in. Was I wrong not to put Border Patrol? And nothing. He doesn't admit he did anything wrong. He just admits they lost. And he has a podcast that allows him to listen to the other side. It makes no sense. Please do not say to yourself he's seen the light. Senator Fetterman is actually doing things on a daily basis that shows that he is a moderate, to show that he doesn't care about bucking his party. This guy is not. Joe Manchin did. He's gone. But this guy is not. So I give him credit for having the podcast, but he's just trying to save his career. That's what he's trying to do. Here's Wes Moore, Cut 65.
This is not a new thing because people have policies that haven't worked for them. I mean, I'm a product of broken policies, right? One of my earliest memories was watching my father die in front of me because he didn't get the health care he needed, that my mother didn't get her first job that gave her benefits until I was 14 years old. And this is a woman who went on to earn a master's degree. So these conversations about inequitable pay and wage gaps and why it's so difficult for working families to get ahead, it's not an academic exercise to me. I grew
all right
up in it.
I get it. We get his personal story a lot. Joseph in Pensacola. Hey, Joseph.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, I'm trying to get help at the VA, Pensacola VA clinic now since 2016. And
wow.
It's an outpatient clinic. And, you know, they spent $13.5 million award last year for renovations there. And the only renovation I see is they put in a little eyeglass hut, you know, where you can go get your glasses. But it's an outpatient clinic, and they got dozens of hospital beds upstairs that have never been used. No one uses them. And if no one's spending the night, then why do we got all these hospital beds? Because it's an outpatient clinic. They got a dental clinic with dozens of stations there.
So Joseph, I'm sorry you're going through that, but what's your main point? Is that there's inefficiencies in the VA, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I've been going there since 2016. You show up 15 minutes early for your appointment. You wait. They make you wait an hour after your appointment time every single time. You know, it takes 10 months.
All right.
to get referrals.
Hear you. Hopefully Doug Collins is going to fix that. Joe, John, listening on the Fox News Radio app in California. John.
Good morning, Brian. I want to talk about something I'm worried about. I'm really sick and tired of hearing on almost every conservative network about how the Democrats are in disarray, that they lost mandates and everything else. But right now, there's a lot of problems going on in these Republican districts. There's nothing better for Democrats than a perception of a bad economy and a bad stock market. So we got to go on the offense. I'm a big believer in what's going on with Trump's policies. But we got to get the message out.
I hear you. They got to do a better job at that and explaining what Doge is doing. That happened last week. And also what the ultimate goal of the tariffs are. And that's happening, but could always happen more. They got a great economics team who can communicate. So they should use advantage of that. John, message well heard.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. Hope you had a fantastic weekend, and we're back in action now. So much happening in the Trump era. We're moving full speed ahead. Of course, all eyes on the economy and the market, down 300 points at this hour. That could change rapidly because it's Liberation Week. Charles Gasparino, not only is he a great business mind, but he's a great reporter. That's his beat. He'll bring us inside the numbers, what the CEOs are thinking, what Wall Street is going on. And by the way, just quick announcement, if you are looking to get the podcast, and it's a top download, it's fantastic on a daily basis, go to BrianKilmeadShow.com or go to the Fox News app. Plus, you can get it wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Spotify or anything else. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
If we have the combination of a trillion-dollar increase in an economic output and a trillion-dollar decrease in the budget deficit, then the outcome should be that there is no inflation or very little inflation.
Right, but it's not happening yet. Doge fantasy versus reality. What are they doing? What they're doing is saving the economy. What we are being told in most corners that they are burning it down. We bring you their mission, their achievements in their own words.
Number two.
What has happened here is that Putin, he doesn't feel, is negotiating on actual terms. He keeps delaying. And what President Trump has said right now is if he continues to play games, he's going to get tough on Russia just like he did in 2017.
There we go. Told you, Vladimir Putin has become irrational and Trump blasted him in his quest to bring a ceasefire to the fighting in Ukraine. If Putin doesn't sober up, Trump is prepared to slap sanction on him. Just like everyone said, he's giving Putin a chance. Putin might not take it. Let's see.
Number one.
There's new anxiety over tariffs. That's the problem here. Peter Navarro tells Fox that tariffs will be announced Wednesday could bring in $6 trillion in 10 years. Now, that is a form of tax. How much of it will be paid by consumers, we don't know, but it's a question that's really upsetting Wall Street.
Yep, Liberation Day is Wednesday. Tariff affects the market right away. In fact, on Friday, down 700. President Trump's effort to bring manufacturing back to America and rebalance trade is causing the stocks to rock. We will look at the short and long-term effects with experts. Let's get into it. I mean, first off, what is exactly going to be happening? Well, we are going to see what is going to be happening with the first all on the president's job approval. It's at 50%. Keep that in mind. When it comes to immigration, the president's job approval is flat out phenomenal. It's at 58%. That's where roughly 54% of people used to approve of on the economy. But right now, with a market like this, and without that major legislation passed in the House and Senate, which they're working on right now and should hopefully have queued up for the spring, and they want to make sure they have every vote. Why Elise Stefanik of New York went from UN ambassador, all she needed was a vote. She already got she got through the committee, is now back to congresswoman again in leadership. So they want to make sure they get the votes. But right now, if you look at him on the economy, 48% approval, which is low for him. On inflation, 44%. Although most people believe it's Joe Biden's economy, 38% say this is Joe Biden's economy, 34% say it's Trump's economy, 19% says it's both. So what's going to be happening? 25% tariff on any country that imports oil from Venezuela, a 20% additional tax on China because of its role in fentanyl. That's where all the fundamental ingredients are that go to Mexico in order to become fentanyl and kill us all. Meanwhile, Trump has imposed separate tariffs on Canada and Mexico. I sense that there's going to be negotiated out. Trump also expanded the 2018 steel and aluminum tariffs to 25% everywhere. But what he's going to be doing to mainly what they call the Dirty 15, who are way imbalanced with us on various issues, some of which are allies, but he's just going to be saying, whatever you're charging us, we're charging you. Whatever you're charging us, we're charging you. We're balancing out. Now, you want to come up to us now and try to negotiate? Let's do it. The Ford Motor Company and General Motors said they could shed up to 30% of their earnings per research from this Bornstein Group, which projected $110 billion blow to the auto sector. Now, Ford, they say, is going to be hurt the least. Why? Most of their products are manufactured here, much more than Stellantis, who just moved their factories down to Mexico, lost about 2,000 jobs, much more than General Motors. Now, if you are a foreign auto company, the president came out yesterday and said, I don't care if you have to charge more for your cars here. I want the American people to buy American. But if you move your plants here, different story. Hyundai knows that. Kevin O'Leary last night with Trey Gowdy said, I think I see what's going on here. Cut seven.
He's just saying, let's go reciprocal. Now, what is the reason you would do that? You would do it to get the other side to say, you know what? These tariffs are stupid. They're now equal against each other. Let's get rid of all of them. Let's just go to zero tariffs, which you heard Senator Kennedy say 48 hours ago when he gave that eloquent speech specifically to the Canadians saying, what are we doing here? This is nuts. Why don't you drop yours to zero? And I'll talk to Trump about dropping his to zero, and we'll both have zero, and we'll combine the economies. Now, that makes sense. I think this is one giant negotiation, Trey, and we're starting April 2nd.
Which is Wednesday. Okay. Couple of things come to mind. Number one, President, just keep communicating that. You got Kevin Hassard, great communicator. Scott Bessent is really solid. He's on with Sean Hannity tonight. He's got Howard Lutnick's fantastic in commerce, very direct, very available. This is not the time to keep Howard Lutnick back, I don't think, unless something went wrong I don't know about. But there are people out there that call themselves experts, like KPMG's chief economist, Diane Swonk, who feels it's not going to be good. Cut nine.
Another important issue is the uncertainty of tariffs via executive order. They can literally change with, you know, a pen stroke. Because of that, there's no certainty on how long they'll actually last. And that's important when you're thinking about building a plant and bringing production back for that takes, you know, 3 to 5 years to do. And then you've got to have the workers to be able to work in it. That's not an easy commitment to make when you don't know what the future is actually going to hold with regard to tariffs.
So, these economists are a little dry. The Trump's people are not dry. They're very direct. We don't know. But what Trump is trying to say is bring your manufacturing back here. Well, you're not going to do it because I tell you to do it. Plus, you shouldn't. You shouldn't move your company. But what he said is, I'm going to drop the corporate tax in 2018. He did that. And now he's going to drop it even more for companies that build here if his tax plan gets approved once he gets it going in, you know, maybe April, June. Some say it might be July. But if he gets that one big, beautiful bill, all those taxes become permanent, and the corporate tax rate is another reason to bring manufacturing here. Okay, you can't tell people to do it, but if you are an American, you want to build stuff here anyway. Now, there's things that other countries do better than us, you know, and that you maybe want to buy European X, Y, and Z handbags. Who knows? I mean, China doesn't do anything any better than us. They just do it cheaper than us. They use a lot of slave labor. And a lot of those Southeast Asian countries use very cheap labor. So that's what we're competing with. So that's why manufacturing always goes there. And they would say every day, well, the economy's not going to come back here. We're not going to manufacture anymore because of unions and because of labor costs. Well, what if we put tariffs on? Well, they have to go back. Well, maybe the price will go up. Well, maybe they'll go up a little bit. So will wages and jobs and opportunity. So the president says, let me move the Titanic plates and see where it goes. And lastly, before I move on to Doge, I thought it was really interesting to see Sean Fain, the UAW president, praising Trump, because he's been saying for the longest time, since NAFTA came up, and that's what the union's been saying, not him, and he knew that when NAFTA came up, North American Free Trade Alliance, they were going to all go to Mexico. All those jobs are going to go south. Now, a lot of Republicans and Democrats, this was introduced by Bush. He couldn't get it passed. Clinton passed it. So you can't say it's one party or the other. I think that everybody had their eyes wide open. They thought this would be a great thing. It turned out not to be a great thing. Good for prices, not good for workers. Cut 19.
We've seen over 90,000 manufacturing facilities leave the United States. We've seen, in the big three alone in the last 20-plus years, 65 plants have closed. Look, tariffs aren't the total solution. Tariffs are a tool in the toolbox to get these companies to do the right thing, and the intent behind it is to bring jobs back here and invest in the American workers. If they're going to bring jobs back here, you know, they need to be life-sustaining jobs where people
right.
can make a
life-sustaining
good...
jobs. And he also predicted this, cut 18.
I've had companies tell us point blank that they're going to have to bring product back here if those tariffs are implemented.
Yeah, and other people have told me, like I've talked to the guys at Ford, and they said, oh, the problem is there's some parts we just don't make. So we're going to have to import those parts. So right away, I mean, you got to build a car today. And if these tariffs go in and a manufacturer starts going back, and for example, the 2,000-person plant, they just lost 2,000 jobs in Warren, Ohio. It went to Mexico. That'll come back almost right away. But in the interim, you're going to need those parts. They're telling, you know what Trump's saying? Figure it out. These are the new rules. Figure it out. Now, I was just struck, and I watched twice and took notes the second time. It's on Fox Nation. Seven Doge guys and Elon Musk sat down and explained to what they're doing. They want to save $3 billion a day, $4 billion a day, in order to get down $1 trillion. Now, if they cut spending and they can cut costs, at the same cut spending on programs and cut costs, as well as the federal government workforce, we can go a long way to getting us on the right track. But how do you do that without hurting people who depend on Social Security, who depend on disability? You don't touch it. But what if there was a quicker way and a better way using AI and computers in order to get people their payments, maybe even more, but a reliable way? Well, when they came in and saw how antiquated our whole system was, they were blown away. They were said that these computer systems are 50 years old, and they have not been modernized. In order to keep them up to date and stop them from crashing, it costs about $100 million a year. He says there's only four payroll processors in the whole government, 259 departments, and they were told by GAO there's $500 billion in fraud. Now, why are you pro-fraud? Can't we find out who's doing that? Do you realize it's not even Americans who are stealing from us? Most of it's other countries. The pandemic was a boon for foreign countries stealing from us. I mean, we're digitized. The Social Security has all of our paperwork in a cave in Pennsylvania in the 1950s to survive any bombing. So they can only retire 8,000 people a month. They believe they can digitize the whole thing in 2 months. 15 million people went over 120 million in the system. They think they can do it. So two improvements, helping people protect them from fraud. Here's one example. They say in Social Security, they get phone calls. 40% of their phone calls to Social Security are fraudsters saying, change my direct deposit account. Now, when people call in, they got nothing to push against. They have no idea if this is the person, because it turns out Social Security doesn't have any way to verify these accounts. So now they're going to make Social Security have to verify accounts. So you can't just make a phone call and do it. A Medicare, NIH, if you got a $100 grant, they say, you get to keep $60. Really? You get to keep $60. And then $40 goes to the university. So $60 goes to overhead, $40 goes to the university. Well, we're tired of sending $100. Yet alone them right now, they said a new configuration will be now they get all but $15, $15 to overhead. The rest is going to go through. There are 700 IT systems at NIH. They don't talk to each other. There are 27 chief information officers at Medicaid. They don't talk to each other. We only need two. 40 communications officer at HHS, duplicating efforts. So they're seeing a lot of that. One bank account for the whole government, he doesn't think, and they don't think, is efficient. So what exactly are they saying they should do about Doge? What exactly are they taking up and attacking? Here's what Anthony Armstrong said. He's with the Office of Personnel Management. Cut 30.
How do we get this to be efficient? For example, at the federal government, one of the things we've learned is you've got
4 payroll processors in the federal government. So it's 2.3 million employees get paid. They get paid through 4 payroll processors. One is in the Department of Interior. One is in the Department of Agriculture. They actually do very good work at this team at the Agriculture Department. But it's at the Agriculture Department, and they serve 76 federal agencies from the Agriculture Department for payroll. Everything from the IRS to the Smithsonian gets paid through the Agriculture Department. So that just doesn't make any sense. There should be one. You can debate where it should go. You should get the efficiencies of pulling those together.
So they were already pulling it together. Why is the Department of Agriculture doing this? It makes no sense. It's something that was probably gradually done and no one stopped it. Because you come in there for 2 years, 3 years, maybe 4 years, and you leave. Cut 31 is Aram Magadashi. Now, he is also an expert. Listen to him, Cut 31.
One thing I'll say is that almost every longtime government employee that I've met is incredibly excited about taking a serious look at the fraud. They have seen it firsthand for many years and see this as kind of an opportunity to use technology to address $500 billion a year of fraud. I think that on the modernization side, it might actually surprise people how basic the improvements we're making are.
And that's what they kept saying over and over again. These are basic things. These are fundamental things that they're fixing. That's why they're so excited to do it. They're getting the exact opposite on the outside. They're seeing that people got fired at the bird flu in Pennsylvania. Obviously, they're experiencing bird flu now. They let go of too many people at the nuclear weapons maintenance department. Obviously, they had to fix that. FAA, they had to make sure transportation got it right. But these are small things compared to what you see on Doge.com, Doge.gov.com. Please check it out and see what's happening. They're making people say, if you're going to invoice the government, you got to say what you get and how much you get and why. Right now, all you have to do is invoice the government and you get paid. It's not their money, so they just pay it. Nobody wants that, right? 1-866-408-7669. I'll come back, take your calls in a moment, and then Carlos Gasparino, how Wall Street's responding to Liberation Day.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think the larger story here is actually that we have finally begun to strike the Houthis hard. There's an old Neil Young song, I lift the line from it, should have been done long ago. Well, now we're beginning to do it, and we're beginning to strike effectively at a pace, a scope, and a tempo that frankly eluded the last information, the last administration.
And that is General McKenzie, and he was asked about Signal, and they wanted to get him into, you should never use Signal to talk about a missile strike. You know, that's where they thought they were going. He goes, yeah, that's too bad. But the big story is the way they hit him and how aggressively they've been hitting him. And I didn't know this. They've been hitting the Houthis for 14 straight days. They're trying to open up the Suez Canal, despite what the vice president wanted to do. And that's fine. You could have a differing of opinion. I think that is healthy. But what I think is so interesting is General McKenzie did not miss a minute. He obviously was frustrated for the last 4 years when he was in charge, 3.5. I know he retired. We weren't hitting them. We weren't stopping Iran. We weren't hitting the Houthis. We were watching the Houthis rocket our guys, rocket into Israel, not doing much, slow-walking weapons into Israel, not delivering weapons into Israel. And he's seeing a different mode. And they wanted him to beat up on everybody that was on Signal. And I'll play a little bit more in 15 minutes after we talk about the economy. But we did, I mean, just was so heartening to see a military guy say, look, that's called a mistake. People should never be on Signal talking about this. But you have to understand, too, there was a Chinese operation that wiped out all communication and compromised all communication during the last administration with Verizon and AT&T. And there's very few sites now. Now, obviously, we've been through it. I'm not going to go through the Signal stuff again. It's done. They're not going to use it again. I'm sure of it. But the actual strike itself was right on the money, and it shows a seriousness. Some other networks are saying you're never going to stop the Houthis. They have nothing else to live for. You can't stop.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The notion that we had trading partners where one country might be better than another in certain goods. Remember, we sell a whole lot of military equipment. because we do the best on that. Although some of that now is even being rethought as America it seems to be turning so against our allies. I mean, America first should not mean America alone, and that's where I'm afraid we're headed.
So Senator Mark Warner saying that we can't just tariff things. There's things that America doesn't do well. We want other countries to do for us. That's his point, and he sees that the market doesn't like it. With me right now is Charles Gasparino, Fox Business senior correspondent, New York Post columnist, and author of Go Woke, Go Broke. Charles, the market doesn't love it today. They hated it on Friday with the President's Liberation Day on Wednesday. Well, can you bring us inside the numbers? What is Wall Street so worried about?
Well, I mean, Wall Street is obviously worried about the impact of tariffs creating inflation, right? Because it adds to the cost of goods. We're already talking about automobiles going to be $10,000, you know, more expensive. I know people that are going out and buying cars now in anticipation for this because they think they might need a new car in a year. They're saying, I better do it now. I mean, you know, that may spur the economy a little bit, but there is going to be an issue here with inflation, at least in the short term. Then there's a question, does this lead to a recession? Because if you do have dueling tariffs on both of us, we can't export our goods as well as we did in the past. That will cut GDP. And, you know, trade is essentially 25% of our economy. So that's what Wall Street is trying to factor in here, and that's why the markets are all over the place. You know, how do these tariffs impact, at least in the short term, corporate earnings? Because that's how everybody is recalculating corporate earnings. Dan Ives is a very good tech analyst. He covers Tesla. He's recalculating, you know, his price targets on Tesla and all the auto companies because of tariffs. Because, you know, the autos are some of the strictest. I want to make one point here, though.
And, I mean, the goal is to bring everything back. You don't think they're going to respond and bring everything back?
They may. And here's why the Democrats are being very duplicitous about this, to be honest with you. You know, they make it sound like this is a zero-sum game, that we're just, like, tariffing people for the hell of it. I mean, there are trade relationships that were created. Certain countries don't make better stuff than us. Because of tariffs and trade, and more than just tariffs, Bob Lighthizer was on Tucker recently explaining, unspooling just all the different things they hit you with, right? Because of this unfair trade relationship, Mexico may have a strategic or may have a comparative advantage in making cars than we do. That doesn't mean they make better cars than we do. You see what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
And that's why Warner is full of you-know-what when it comes to this. We have unfair trade relationships across the globe. Now, the real question is, in my view, for Donald Trump and for this administration, you know, you knew that the markets were going to get crazy. You have a lot on your plate. Why did they start with tariffs? Why not start with a budget? Why not keep going at DOGE? Why not get tax cuts through and start growing the economy, and then let's take a look at tariffs?
Well, the counter-narrative is, well, if you want tariffs, it's going to be 2018, right around the midterms. And that could be the rocking of a midterm that could divide the election, or you wait right past November.
Why can't you do it after 2018?
Well, how about this? Well, that's true.
I mean,
after the election.
Right after the election. We're getting our dates mixed up.
So it's just it's so interesting, and you must feel the same way, that so many Republican issues are Democrat issues and vice versa. Remember, the Republicans for the longest time were the free traders. We don't want anything.
Well, so we're Democrats. I mean, I think that the free trade notion, the notion of globalism, has been very much hijacked by the Democratic Party for some. I mean, Barack Obama was a globalist. Let's face it. So was George W. Bush. I mean,
no question.
There was no question about both of them. Trump came in and said, you know, we see what's going on in middle America. Some of these trade agreements are insane and they're tilted against us. I want to change them. This is where I get, you know, I start, talking out of both sides of my mouth here. It's a little bit. I am a libertarian, conservative, free trader by definition and by instinct.
Right.
I look at some of these trade agreements and say, what the hell were we thinking?
That's what Trump says.
I know. That's where I agree with him. And, you know, I'm just saying in political terms, you know, you have to play a long game. I mean, what he wants to do, the sort of revamping of American culture and economy, is going to take a lot of work, a lot of test. I don't want to say a bad word. I almost said it, but a lot of fortitude. And, you know, if you want to reverse 4 years of just the most horrible stuff in the world that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris unleashed on this country, culturally and economically, socially, then you got to play a long game and leading with your weakest hand, because everybody knew that if you started doing this tariff stuff, markets would go nuts. The economy in a short term will take a hit. And why he led with that, I can't tell you Brian, he believes tariffs are good.
He does. Well, he keeps saying that. Here's Sean Fain, UAW president, Cut 17.
They could shift that work back in very short order and be producing Ram trucks right back there and put those people back to work. They're in a situation where they need to build a new plant. Yeah, that's going to take a couple years. But there is plenty of opportunity for these companies to do the right thing and bring work back here overnight, just as quick as they shipped it out of here.
So that is the UAW president. He's excited about this. He's upset that the president blew up the civil workers union. Yes, he said on an executive order and said, you're no longer in a union. He's mad at that. But he can't believe we have a president right now that wants to bring it right. Was Ross Perot right that NAFTA was going to be a giant sucking sound from the South?
You know, the numbers are all over the place. I could just tell you that.
We like the low prices.
Yeah, we like the low prices. But, you know, we should also like the fact that, you know, there are towns that are built around factories, that people go to work at these factories and their kids have a stable life. I grew up in Westchester County. I had friends of mine who worked at the Tarrytown GM plant. And I can tell you, when that thing closed, just the amount of alcoholism and drug abuse.
Of course.
I knew
their
guys,
identities tied up in their work.
Guys I grew up with felt like they were making stuff. They didn't go to college for a lot of reasons. They were working class people. And, you know, then their lives were upended. And so are we supposed to say, because of globalism, because we want to make the world richer, we're supposed to get poorer? I mean, it shouldn't be that. Now, that being said, what is the smartest way to go about this, Brian?
So Charlie,
would it be now or wait a little bit?
Or all at once. You know, you could be saying, we have to redo the USMCA anyway in a year. But I got that. But this is what I think that people, experts like you, have been saying to look out for. A bunch of countries come and go, hey, 1-800-DONALD-TRUMP. Hey, you know that 40% tax India has on cars? We're dropping it. Hey, Germany calls up. You know what? But what about this? I want BMW still to be sold there. What can I do? So could we be looking at a Jerry Maguire, like phone call after phone call?
Oh, yeah.
Trying to reconfigure it. Is this, and this deadline.
Listen,
could be
how many times
on the
have
phone.
How many? You know, I can't remember. There were numerous times during Trump 1 where everybody thought his tariffs were going to destroy the economy. I remember Mark Cuban saying, oh, if Trump gets elected, you know, that's it. The markets will go down to zero or whatever. We go into a massive recession. It never happened. We had pretty good growth. We did have tariffs. And the markets – and then let's be real clear here what he inherited. He inherited a market that was, I would say, overbought, right? I mean, Joe Biden's economy wasn't great. They were revising the numbers downward on economic growth as in his last quarter. We should also point out that Joe Biden, in order to get elected or try to get Kamala Harris elected, right, ramped up spending massively, and that was a sugar high that was going to go away. So Trump did inherit issues. But this market was poised for something like this if you give it the right trigger, tariffs being the trigger. Now, my point is, again, I would have preferred that he would have waited on tariffs and pushed through massive deregulation, keep doing DOGE, tax cuts, and then maybe slowly start implementing tariffs, maybe on something slower that's less dramatic. This sort of dramatic move is freaking out the markets. Now, we should also point out the economy isn't the markets. His voters, the average 401k, I looked this up. You know, why are Trump voters still engaged with him? I keep getting these emails from my friends at CNBC. Oh, the markets, Trump is toast. I said, you know, what is the average 401k? Well, it's not a CNBC viewer, a rich guy. It's $130,000. That's not a lot of money. If you see your job security and you see inflation being much higher on the economic worry scale than your 401k, and a lot of people do that are in that bracket, that $130,000, that's 401k savings bracket, well, you're not going to be so mad at Donald Trump. And by the way, the average Trump voter is in that bracket. So he looks at this as, you know, politically astute. I look at it as, well, you probably could have had your cake and eat it too if you would have waited on this thing. Because we're going to get – listen, you don't know where the I don't think anybody really knows
here's
where tariffs
are. Here's what Kevin Hassett said about something else that you didn't bring up yet, because there's investment coming back here. He's an economic advisor.
No, I know he is.
Smart guy.
Okay.
Notice how many announcements there have been made about all the investment that's coming to the U.S. Even Hyundai said they're going to build a $10 billion plant this week. And so the point is all that stuff comes to the U.S., then the value of U.S. production has to go up. And so right now, about 15% of GDP is imported, and that's the part of GDP that will be impacted by our trade policies. And they're basically taking 15% of GDP and onshoring it. Meanwhile, one of the biggest news items that people haven't been talking about is the Big Six, the group of us that are negotiating with Congress the tax bill, have had an enormous amount of positive progress.
So he's, the Oracle, the announcement with Hyundai, the investment from the UAE and Saudi Arabia, I guess if he goes there, $400 billion they're putting in. Is that going to start making some waves?
See, that was the point I was actually going to make. The market is having a debate right now about tariffs. We don't know all the pluses and minuses. And I know you'll put up an economist and say it's horrible. I saw some guy on – I was on one of the shows last week, Jason Furman. He's now at Harvard, talking about, Trump. Doge.
Obama guy.
Yeah, Obama guy. This is horrible, blowing up everything. And then you bring up, Bob Lighthizer. Oh, no, this is exactly where we're going to go with this. It's no one really knows. And I think what Hassett is saying is, give it some time, because there are positives here. Will the positives outweigh the negatives? We don't know. The markets, though, we should point out, will react on the downside very negatively. They will take downside economic news and factor that in immediately, and more than anything positive. So just remember that. So this is not over yet. This is a debate we're going to be having. And I would tell you, if you're an investor, be prepared. This is going to go on for a while. It's going to go up. There's going to be some downs. And at some point, my guess is it all comes down to corporate earnings. And are corporate earnings impacted that much from tariffs? We don't know.
Right. Last question. The Doge, did you see the Bret Baier's interview with the Doge guys?
Yes. Yeah, I saw some of it.
So impressive how systems and just getting computers to talk to each other and modernizing and using AI to push things forward without firing. Everyone's focused on the firing people, and that's fine. But only 0.05% have been let go. Most of these states are scooping these people up anywhere, giving them great offers. So when... I was very impressed with these guys who are donating their time to fix something they see fundamentally wrong, but ultimately fixable.
By the way, I don't know how anybody, I don't care how committed of a liberal you are. Again, Jason Furman, I heard him talk about people weren't going to get their Social Security checks. I was like, is this guy out of his mind? That's never going to happen.
So irresponsible.
It's so stupid.
It scares people.
But it's stupid. People going to get their Social Security checks. We are talking about, for years, liberals, progressives, I know them. Some of them are my friends, would say, we're actually fiscal conservatives in the fact that we're going to make government more efficient to deliver welfare checks, Social Security, you name it, to the people. And you know what they did? They did just the opposite. They grew it to an extent that it missed its central mission, which was to serve the people. And that's why you get USAID, whatever it's called, funding transgender dance festivals in Bangladesh. To me, what they're doing is God's work. I don't know how anybody can be against it. And,
when you see it, we had to see it. And I think we saw it. Well, and that's my hope is more people see it. They just go, criticize these bunch. The guy who came up with Airbnb, he's like, my goodness, he's a multi-billionaire.
Right.
Do you think he's doing this for the glory?
And that's
to work
thing.
On Saturday and Sunday?
Look at how much time Elon is putting into this stuff.
Crazy.
And he's taking it. I mean, listen, if I were a shareholder of Tesla, I'd be really annoyed because I want him back in the office. But he's a patriot. He wants to do the right thing. And he is doing God's work. Brian, absolutely. You cannot have we cannot have that type of waste. And, a lot of people say it's chicken feed, right? It's just little, we're talking about billions when we're talking about trillions of debt. Yeah, but you got to start somewhere.
I know.
And if it's so bad here, again, transgender dance festivals that your mom's paycheck is financing. If it's so bad here, How much waste and abuse is there in Medicaid? How much waste and abuse in Medicare?
Exactly. We're not
Social
talking,
Security.
But see, then we'll get message. He's cutting. It's not cutting Medicaid and Medicare.
No.
He's leaning it out to find where the fraud is. And that's it. And that's just, I think it's important. I think more people just have to watch it. And then you walk away going, okay, I see what they're doing here. Charlie, thanks so much. When can we see you again? You're everywhere.
I think I got a packed schedule today, but the market's going
nuts. Of course.
Nuts.
You're going to be really busy. And always goes, pick up his book. He was ahead of his time. Go woke, go broke. He wrote that before the election. Charlie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
The fact that we have a second aircraft carrier that's moving to CENTCOM is certainly a sign that this administration is very serious about this requirement. The fact we're moving B-2s into the region similarly signals that. But I believe, again, for the first time, we're coupling the genuine political will to act along with military capability. So it's a unique moment in the theater, and I'm glad to see that this administration is grasping that opportunity.
I looked at General McKenzie finally talking military. I know all about the signal thing, and I played it a half hour ago. But General McKenzie, obviously, he served as, I think, I don't know what prestigious position he had, but he was part of the Afghanistan debacle. And it was also made clear, if you look at the testimony and who wants to go back there, that was Joe Biden's decision. They implemented it, all fell apart. And then he had to try to go fix it at the last minute, and he tried to do the best he could. I'm not making excuses for him. I personally would have, if him and Milley threw their stars down on the table and said, if you leave the way you're leaving, you can do without me, Biden wouldn't have done it because he would have realized what a catastrophe it would be for Milley to leave. But McKenzie's been very honest since. And as a military analyst, he's pretty strong in respecting the military community. That's the way I understand it. And when he came out and would blow off the take a pot shot at irresponsible Donald Trump and his team and instead talk about the merit in the operation, and they got rid of 53 terrorists. Yeah, there might have been some ancillary damage. That's what happens when you're a Houthi rebel and you spend all your time rocketing innocent people and shutting down waterways. Some innocent people will die. So McKenzie coming out doing that was kind of heartening. Hey, make sure you watch Fox and Friends tomorrow between 6 and 9. Always check out One Nation Sunday at 10. And I hope to meet you all in person June 21st in Dayton, Ohio. History, Liberty, and Laughs. The Fox Nation co-sponsors it, and it's always great. Thanks for listening, everyone. And remember, stay within yourself.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.